Welcome to today's special edition episode of AUSA's Army Matters podcast, focusing on the Army's Future Command's perspective on persistent modernization, which is the theme for our virtual Global Force Next Symposium, 16 to 18 March 2021. And if you're interested, you can visit AUSA.org to register for Global Force Next. This is General Retired Bob Brown, AUSA's Executive Vice President, and I'll be serving as your host. To address this subject, we're very fortunate to be joined by an exceptionally qualified guest, General Mike Murray, the Commanding General of Army Futures Command, which is leading the transformational modernization of the U.S. Army. General Mike Murray is responsible for leading a team of soldiers and civilians to streamline the Army's modernization enterprise under a single command. The command enhances efficiency and effectiveness in delivering the technology necessary to maintain the Army's competitive advantage and win wars. Mike is from Kenton, Ohio, and was commissioned as an infantry officer in the U.S. Army upon graduation from The Ohio State University in 1982. And prior to taking command at Army Futures Command, he integrated Army funding, fielding, and equipping actions to meet current and future military force requirements. He has a long history of leading in Texas, having commanded a brigade combat team during Operation Iraqi Freedom, with one of the most decorated combat divisions in the Army, which happens to be from Fort Hood. And as a commander, he's offered support for global efforts such as U.S. forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, and former commanding general also of 3rd Infantry Division, one of our Army's most famous divisions. General Murray, welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast.
And thank you very much, Bob. I'm glad to be here today.
Thanks for joining us. And as you know, the theme for Global Force Next is U.S. Army protecting tomorrow through persistent modernization. How do you describe persistent modernization, and why is it important to the U.S. Army?
So when I think about persistent modernization in terms of a definition, it really gets after something, Bob, that you've heard the chief talk about in the past. Is if you look at our track record of modernization, there's several things that stand out to me. One is we have transformed the Army about once every 40 years, at least for the last 80 years or so. During the interwar period and really right before World War II, a major transformation in material and how we fight. And then again, as you and I experienced in the late 70s and early 80s, with the advent of the Big Five and air land battle, and importantly, things like the combat training centers and new units. And so it's 2020. So, you know, on that path, it's been 40 years since the last major transformation. As, you know, I look forward, I don't think that we can afford to wait another 40 years to transform the Army. When I think about persistent modernization, the first thing I think about is mindset. So we got to break that mindset that, you know, we're going to have materiel that's going to last us for 40 years for two reasons. One is the pace of technology and the pace of innovation. I don't think we can afford to wait that long. And two is you can't afford to just modernize the entire Army once every 40 years. So there's lots of things that have happened between the Big Five and where we are today. Things like JLTV, thing like AMPV, things like MRAPs that you and I both used in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there is this always been this concept of persistent modernization, but we have to think about modernization differently. We do have a bad track record in terms of major developmental programs, but we're pretty good at incrementally modernizing when you think about all the way from the basic M1 up to what is now the SEP B4. And it may look a lot alike from the outside, but an entirely different platform. So how do we plan for that? You know, when we start with the product at the beginning, and how do we plan for upgrades? How do we change the mindset that we have to have the perfect solution before we can go into production? So how do we plan and get culturally an acceptance that we can accept less than perfect and then plan modernization and upgrades into it as we go? Because hardware is very expensive. And then I think the last piece of that is how do we stop thinking as much about hardware and start thinking more about open systems and software? And so it becomes more of a upgrade through software improvement as opposed to upgrades through hardware improvements, which I think will make it more effective and also importantly, more cost effective.
I think we could take each one of those points and probably talk for a couple hours. Key point. And clearly, the Army Futures Command is about 2.5 years old, a relative infant when you look at the Army's major command structure. In my opinion, one of the best decisions I saw in my 38 years of service to pick the right guy to lead it as well. But as Army Futures Command continues to mature and grow, what are some of the early lessons you've learned that can help with the key points you just brought up so that we can more effectively address persistent modernization objectives and improve our process and integration for the future formations? What are your thoughts on that? What lessons have you seen so far?
That's a great question. Sometimes, you know, it's 2.5 years goes in the blink of an eye, and sometimes it seems like it's forever. So you go back 2.5 years ago, it was me and 19 of my closest friends standing in a building that was just a concrete floor as we uncased the colors. And I do think every once in a while, you just got to stop and think of where you've been. I am absolutely proud and impressed with the people that we've hired down here in Austin and really across all of AFC and what we've been able to accomplish. But some of the important lessons is, and you've heard this saying before, is if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And that's kind of manifested itself in two efforts. One is understanding what that future operational environment could look like. And two is what we call Aim Point 35. And Aim Point 35 is more than material. It's how we intend to reorganize the Army, or how we need to reorganize the Army in terms of structure. A lot of work has gone into how we intend to fight in the future. The first iteration is multi-domain operations, and Futures and Concept Center is now spinning on what comes after multi-domain operations. But understanding, in this case, Aim Point 35, with periodic snap the chalk line, if you will, looking through the lens of, in this case, 28, and that will soon become 29, that will become 30, to make sure we're on the right path. Because if we don't have that vision of where we're heading, and it's the same thing they taught us in Ranger School, start your planning with actions on the objective and then work your way back. So start with the most important planning effort first and then work your way back, just in case you run out of time or resources. So that type of focus, I think, is important. Within the modernization portfolio, I think we've been blessed with Army senior leader clear prioritization of what's most important for that future fight. And it was not capabilities based. It was based upon scenarios to specific theaters of what's the most important capability from a material standpoint. And our Army senior leadership has not only stuck to those priorities for the last 3+ years, they've also made some really hard decisions within the Army's top line to make sure that those priorities are fully resourced. I think the one thing that I've known from my time as a G8, and I think is just reinforced down here, is the criticality of a close, open, and collaborative partnership with our defense industry partners. And I've spent a lot of time talking about small companies, startups, entrepreneurs, non-traditionals, and all that's important. But the one thing I've always tried to reinforce is we can't do this without our defense industry partners. And that's the primes and some of the really smaller industry partners that I wouldn't classify as the major primes. The other thing I would say is that it's more than material. It's about how we fight. It's about how we structure. It is how we prepare for that future. And I literally have a rocket scientist that boils it down to me is we have to shoot ahead of the duck. So when we get out to whatever that future state is, we're there first, because some of the technologies that we're keeping our eyes on applied militarily, if we're not there first, or at least there at the same time, will put us at a significant disadvantage. I think it's almost more than a close partnership. It's almost complete integration with our acquisition professionals in ASALT and the acquisition executive are critical, because I think we complement each other. I know that I could not do my job without that integration with our acquisition partners. And I'd like to believe that they do their job better based on what we do down here. But I know that I rely 100% on them to complete their role in this process of the actual delivery of material solutions. Just a couple more things. I latched onto this. People say, pick up a book you've never read before when you take a new job. And somebody recommended a Lean Startup to me. And I don't know why they recommended it, but after about 3 or 4 chapters, the concept of customer-centered design and min value prototyping, it just popped in my mind. Why don't we do that? Because we don't. We never did. We never involved soldiers early in the developmental process. So getting soldiers involved early and throughout the process before we write a requirements document, so we fully understand not only what's important to them, but what's most amazing is you and I come up with a way we think this piece of kit could be used. they will come up with something 180 degrees out that's actually a much better idea than any general officer is going to come up with. So it's just amazing some of the feedback. We just did one of these down at Fort Benning with the future manned aerial systems. And then lastly, talent. We got a lot of great talent in the Army, but I know we're going to have to develop a tech-savvy workforce. And we have a tech-savvy workforce now, but there are going to be different skill sets for the future, such as I'm absolutely convinced that if we can't code at the edge in a battalion or brigade CP, if we can't write algorithms to help a commander solve a really wicked problem a lot faster than he can do it today, we'll be at a significant disadvantage. That talent is in the formation, but how do you harness that talent? And then most importantly, how do you retain that talent? And I could go on and on and on, but I'll just pause right there in the interest of time.
That's tremendous, Mike. And I think you just showed why I said it was such a key decision, Army Futures Command, because a lot of what you were talking about there was spread over multiple organizations in the past, and it was very difficult to get it synchronized and kind of moving forward for the future fight. And what you just explained to us hit so many key points that will help our Army move forward and being the best in the world, no doubt about it. So thanks very much. That was great. I would follow on with that key defense partner and industry link and entrepreneurs. How does, just shameless plug here, how does Global Force Next help you with that as you're working all this?
I don't think it's only Global Force Next. I think it's the Association of the United States Army and all the things that you do for us to really strengthen those relationships. So I'm really looking forward to, I think it's the 16th, 17th, 18th of March, led off by General Hamm and our acting Secretary of the Army, Honorable Whitley, first thing in the morning, then keynote by General McConville on day one. I got the keynote on day two, and General Daley has keynote on day three. It's been a while since I got back there to do the keynote and to do the industry luncheon, so I'm really looking forward to that. And every Global Force I've been to, every national convention I've been to, any event I've been to that you've sponsored, just absolutely critical. In some cases, making new acquaintances from the defense industry, because it always surprises me sometimes how little I do know about the defense industry. And then probably as importantly, if not more importantly, really building upon relationships and sustaining those relationships. So I'm looking forward to when I get a chance to get up there and break bread with some of the people that have become my closest friends, the people that we absolutely rely on to do what we do.
Yeah, it'll be nice to safely get back together in person. We're adhering to all the COVID restrictions and stuff. I think we're all a little tired of the virtual world and ready to get back together. So no, thanks. We certainly look forward to and so glad so many key defense companies and leadership and younger, you know, those startups are involved as well. Just terrific. So, hey, you know, the chief recently emphasized that the Army's all about speed and range. And could you tell us a little bit, you touch on a little bit, certainly, but a little bit more about how are you working through that speed and range and what will it mean in the future and the type of future force that will have that capability?
Yeah, and I just mentioned the chief's going to speak on the 16th. So we've been doing some work with the chief here over the last couple of weeks. And so I think you're going to see him refine that just a little bit. Speed and range will definitely be a piece of it. But I think he's had a chance to think a little bit more about it with some help from some of the key people around him to help him think. So, you know, even though this may not come out till after the chief talks, I'm not going to preempt the chief. That's usually good for survival. So I'm going to address your question really in something that's already happened, and that's Project Convergence 20. Most people have heard me talk about Project Convergence 20, but if you think about that future operational environment, it's a ways out. And I would say, you know, we're probably not right. Matter of fact, we're almost certainly wrong with the details. But if you look at all the way back to the Next Generation Warfare study that Pete Jones did, you know, based upon actions in the Ukraine, and you look most recently at Azerbaijan and Armenia, that conflict, in terms of the use of sensors, I mean, a couple things I think you could say are characteristic of a future battlefield. One would be it's going to be saturated by sensors. And so the ability to hide, camouflage, use of terrain, et cetera, almost goes away. So you're going to be seen just about anywhere you're going to be. If you look at the increased lethality of a future battlefield, then based upon those two things, operating more and more dispersed in smaller and smaller units with the ability to still mass at a given point in time and then quickly disperse again. I think those are all just general characteristics. And the reason I said all that is I think GPS and precision-guided munitions have served us well for a long time. And we had the advantage because we held the technology and the keys of that technology for a long time. I don't think that's the future. I think technology is going to rapidly disperse across the world. So you may have a little bit of an advantage for first user adaptation or adopting first user rights, I guess you'd say. But I think that's going to be short-lived, a lot shorter-lived than GPS and precision munitions. I do think there's two asymmetric advantages that we bring to a future battlefield. One is the quality of our soldiers. I don't think we'll ever lose that. We can't forget the importance of that advantage that we bring. The second one that I think that I can help with, and really what Project Convergence was all about, is that speed and range. And one of the elements of speed, I mean, there's lots of ways of looking at speed. You can look at speed through, you know, how fast something travels. You can also look at speed in terms of how fast can a future commander see, understand, and decide, and then because of that, act faster with better information than any potential adversary. And that's really what Project Convergence was about in terms of speed. And then in terms of range, I mean, range is pretty obvious. And so the ability for a howitzer, a self-propelled howitzer, in this case, IRCA, to really double the range that it's able to fire. The advantage, some of the things we're working on in terms of future vertical lift, almost double the speed and range it's able to operate. And you think about things like the golden hour. So the golden hour, because of that increased speed and range, now become the golden 2 hour. And how do you continue to expand that for our soldiers? And then battle space, you know, you talk about dispersion. And so we did some things with mesh networks at Project Convergence that really doubled the battle space that a division could effectively command and control. And that's that increase in space in this case, but it's also an increase in range in terms of the amount of territory that a division commander can actually own and operate in just based upon some mesh networking technologies. So the biggest thing for me, Project Convergence, and there was lots of material solutions out there, but I thought was really cool, but it's this ability to compress that decision space and really enhance situational awareness and, importantly, situational understanding of future commanders across a very distributed battle space.
Again, just tremendous point. And you could argue, I don't think we'd even would have had a Project Convergence if it wasn't for Army Futures Command pulling those key six modernization priorities together and getting after that key effort there, and it continues. So that's great news. You know, I just couldn't help think as you were describing the future battlefield, having lived a little bit of this in the Pacific theater when we were working multi-domain operations, how critical land remains, because it's difficult to hide, you know, anywhere in the saturation of sensors, but it's certainly the place you can hide better and disperse in those small uniformations you're talking about is on land, and be very difficult in sea, in the air, even in cyber and in space. Land has some key advantages there, no doubt about it. But, you know, we're not going to do any of this alone as we're looking at all these priorities in this effort. We all know allies and partners are so key. How closely are allies and partners integrated with your efforts?
Yeah, so it goes back to, I'm a fan of old sayings that my parents taught me. So another one is the whole must be greater than the sum of its parts. And that was kind of the approach we took with the cross-functional teams and the 31+4 key systems that are managed by the eight cross-functional teams and their PEO counterparts. 20 was, now use the kind word. So we had about an 8-month running start to pull off 20. And so it was about getting the kind word is stuff together for 20, just to show the utility of Project Convergence and beginning to look at things as systems of systems as opposed to individual projects and programs. 21 is going to take place this fall. Once again at Yuma, we'll do a little bit at White Sands Missile Range as well, and then JBLM again. And just as an aside, we'll also be operating from Fort Bragg. So 82nd Airborne will be a part of this for Project Convergence 21 from an Army perspective, as will the multi-domain task force, which I know that you're tracking. So we're beginning to replicate the distances, you know, in Indo-PACOM theater, which you're really familiar with in terms of first island chain, second island chain, et cetera. The joint piece of this was very important to me. So We finished Project Convergence 20 in September, I think it was, just before the virtual annual convention, which we talked a lot about Project Convergence 20 then. And then early December, we did an industry day where I sat down with the CEOs and some VPs from the primes one-on-one, well, one on six or seven, I think it was actually 10. And then we did an open session right after that. I think we had well over 400 participants in that to really describe what we thought we learned in Project Convergence 20. And right after that, it was before Christmas, we got the key three stars together from across all four services. And my message to them was, I don't want you to bring your stuff to Project Convergence 21 so we can play with us. I want you to join with us so we can solve joint problems. And they have been all in ever since. And so we're going to focus on, I think it's 7 mission threads, and they are joint mission threads in Project Convergence 21. There has been a 3-star BOD comprised of all four services that have built those mission threads and agreed upon what's in, what's out for Project Convergence 21, you know, what we're going to focus on. And why do I think that's important? Because we're going to end up with a joint warfighting concept and a concept for joint all-domain command and control. And I think we're going to be well-suited as the services if we help inform that from the bottom up, as opposed to just waiting for something to come down to us from the joint staff. And so this is all about building a more lethal, integrated, not desynchronized or synchronized joint force, but a more integrated joint force really from the bottom up. And we've had buy-in from December, not only for what takes place at Yuma and White Sands, but also what does take place at APG. And we've recently built a systems integration lab up there where all of the services are playing so we can get stuff onto the network to work the integration and interoperability before we take it to the desert. And then, of course, in 22, we'll continue those joint threads, but we've already got commitments from the UK, from Australia, and most likely, maybe not in 22, but Canada, and then we'll continue to integrate our closest allies and partners into Project Convergence as we go forward. And always continuing with the main theme of Project Convergence, really two things. One is continue to learn, and people call it a demonstration exercise. I prefer to call it a learning opportunity. So going in with the hard questions we want to answer when we come out, and then every year doing that. And then importantly, advancing low technology quickly and spinning things out. And for our industry partners out there, I've mentioned allies partners, I've mentioned the joint force. It also includes our defense industry partners. And I've had numerous sessions with them, as has General Todd, as has General Richardson. And the key to all this, I tell them, is the JSEAL. Because we've got to make sure stuff that integrates onto our network, because right now I think we're at 107 technologies we'd like to do in 21. It's going to have to be less than that. We're going to have to start narrowing stuff down in terms of stuff that's ready to go for project. And then there's always going to be another opportunity in 22 and another opportunity in 23 and another opportunity in 24. I intend to continue this for as long as the Army will allow me to.
When you look at it, it could almost be overwhelming the amount that you're pulling together in the modernization priorities and with amongst so many different communities, joint, combined, and then, of course, dealing with industry and so forth. You got a lot on your plate. What do you see as the keys to keeping America's Army moving forward?
Well, the one thing we haven't talked about is we've all got our eye on what the budget's going to do here over the next few years. And so predictable, sustainable funding is going to be very important. And I don't know what the top line is going to look like. I mean, most of the predictions are it's flat at best. And I think those are probably pretty good predictions, but we just don't know. I mean, as early as today, I saw on the news the statement from some of our congressional leadership that we're going to require 3 to 5% of above inflation growth to sustain the gains really across the joint force we've made over the past 4, 5, 6 years. And that was consistent in the last administration. And we'll see where this administration goes. And whatever it is, we'll work with. And I think importantly is that prioritization that I said earlier. I mean, even in the highest budgets we've ever had, we couldn't afford to do everything we wanted to do. And so that consistency in terms of how we prioritize what's most important to the Army today and into the future, I think will be critical as we go forward. I do think, and you've alluded to this sometime, is Army Futures Command has a lot of work left to do, but we've got some momentum going. And so sustaining that momentum will be important to us. I think focusing on the problems we want to try to solve, whether that's at Project Convergence or Aim Point 35, helps you understand what your most important investments are. So I think continuing to go along that path as opposed to going back to a capabilities-based army. So requirements based upon concepts as opposed to what's possible. I think we've done a lot of work trying to integrate the concept writers with the technologists, and we spend a lot of time thinking about what is and what can be in the near term. We spend no time thinking about what could be. So how could we fight differently if only I was able to do this? And that's where the technologists come in and say, well, you can't do that today, but with the right investments, 15 years from now, you will be able to. So that drives our S&T investments. And so we're, in other words, shooting ahead of the duck as opposed to getting there late. I've mentioned the talent. I think we have this talent in our Army, but we've got to harness it. We've got to figure out how to retain it, and we've got to figure out how to effectively employ it for the future. I think that's the keys to where we're going to be. And the last thing I'd say is this continued emphasis. And it's amazing to me how soldier-centered design has caught on. But most things I have to say 15, 16 times a week to get people. But everybody is talking about soldier-centered design and soldier touch points. Now, Forcecom has bent over backwards to support us. I just took a brief on a different topic, but even commercially based systems that we're looking at, I look at acquisition timelines now and strategies, and STP, soldier touch points, are all over them. And so allowing our soldiers to drive what's most important to them and, you know, how we deliver what's most important to them. Because I think that's important that, you know, areas like autonomy, and we talk about, you know, GUIs and soldier interfaces. I don't think that's enough. I think it's soldiers and machines are going to be operating side by side more and more as we get into the future. So how do you integrate a soldier and a machine? Not how you interface, but how do you integrate? And so it's just little things like that that I think culturally we're not set against, but we just need to change the way we think about something. How do you deliver capability faster? You know, get away from the 10 to 15 year development cycle and do what we've been able to do with some key systems and deliver from statement of need to a soldier's hands in 3 to 5 years. And then, you know, relationships and partnerships that are here today, we've got to continue to sustain and strengthen with defense partners, with the non-traditionals, with our joint partners or allies, et cetera, be the way I'd wrap it up.
I'll tell you, just really appreciate, as I was just listening, it's such a clear vision of the future and where we need to go. And you can see, you know, the challenges out there, but you all are tackling them just so well. We're really grateful that all the work being done to keep us the best Army in the world and ready for the future, no doubt about that. And it also gets me excited for Global Force. I look forward to your talk on the 17th and really digging into even more in each of these areas so much. So thanks, Mike. Really appreciate it. Now, I've been asking all the questions. Is there something I left out or anything you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, Bob, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the time from your listeners, and I really appreciate you emphasizing the in front of Ohio State University. I know General Ann will.
I know, yeah, he won't appreciate that, but they're doing pretty darn good in all arenas. They got a shot in basketball this year, too. There's quite a bit of talent. Their recruiting's going well, but that'll make General Ham mad, no doubt about it. But all good. Hey, again, a huge thanks to General Mike Murray, Army Futures Command, for being with us today. All you're doing in such a critical area and for sharing your insights and experiences. It's a subject so important to our national security, and we really look forward to following the Army Futures Command progress. And I'll tell you what, I go back to my statement earlier, what a tremendous decision that was. You can just see it from all you covered here. These things were difficult to get going in the same direction in the past, but you guys are on it. Your Project Convergence is coming to life. You're converging these key areas to really make a difference. So thanks, Mike, for joining us. Appreciate it. And again, look forward to seeing you at Global Force next. And folks, thanks for joining us for AUSA's Army Matters podcast, and we'll see you next episode.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member supported, Army connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the Total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.